What is up, everybody? Welcome into the Two Stripes Podcast, the podcast that covers all of the college football landscape. My name is Colton Denning, and I am your host, coming to you on Tuesday, June the 13th. And this is episode 26 of the Two Stripes Podcast. Been a while since we last talked last week. Glad to get another podcast out. Hope you guys have enjoyed all of the old episodes and get ready to hear more, because got this one and another one coming later this week, which we'll get into later on in the show after the interview. And if you want to go back and listen to any of those old episodes, you can do so by going to soundcloud.com/twostripespod or by searching the Two Stripes Podcast on Apple Podcasts. It's usually pretty quiet on the college football front. Spring ball is over for everybody. It's kind of a dead period. We aren't in fall camps yet. Recruiting is still kind of silent for the moment. Until last week when Bob Stoops decided to retire and leave Oklahoma, which was pretty crazy. And certainly will be interesting to see how Lincoln Riley steps up in his stead. Just on the stuff that I know about him and that I've read about him, it seems like people are pretty excited about him getting that head role. And it wasn't going to be too long before he got a major job anyway. So I think that this will end up working out pretty well for Oklahoma. I don't know if they'll have any sort of dip this season, but I am interested to see where the program kind of changes with him having his own stamp on the program as opposed to Stoops. And their week two matchup with Ohio State in Columbus just got an extra layer to that. That'll be a big test. OU starts the season with UTEP and then goes right into the horseshoe. So Lincoln Riley going to be on center stage very early in his coaching career. But ultimately, I think he's going to do a pretty good job in Norman. Let's get into today's show, though, in a school that certainly is not having any sort of head coaching transition in the Vanderbilt Commodores. Yesterday, I got the chance to talk with the editor-in-chief of anchorofgold.com, Christian D'Andrea, about Vandy football and the Commodores coming off their first bowl appearance since the 2013 season and where that program is headed, not only in 2017, but 2018 and beyond, in an SEC East that hasn't been very strong in the last five or so years. And you look at Tennessee may have missed out on their best chance at going to an SEC championship last season. Florida seems like they always have issues on offense. Malik Zaire, the former Notre Dame quarterback, transferred there last week, so maybe that changes. And then Georgia, after 1 year of Kirby Smart, I don't think a lot of people are completely sold on him yet, but Georgia's certainly recruiting at a pretty high level right now. So you would think that at least Georgia is definitely headed on an upward path, but the SEC East is still in a little bit of a transition there up at the top, and Vanderbilt's been able to take advantage of that, playing Florida close last year, beating Georgia in Athens, and then beating Tennessee for the third time in the last five seasons as well. So we talked a lot about where the program is, how people feel about Derek Mason, whether the offense, and in particular the passing game, can take enough of a step forward to supplement what should be a pretty damn good running game with all SEC running back Ralph Webb back in the fold for his senior season. And it's a Derek Mason team, so you know that there's going to be solid defense. So we talked about replacing linebacker Zach Cunningham and some of the names to look out for in the linebacker group and the secondary, which could be one of the best units in the country. It's a very senior-heavy group, brings back a lot of experience, and they were good last year, and they only lose one guy, so should be very good again this year. And then talked about the season and expectations and whether or not they should be Vanderbilt going back to a second straight bowl game. You look at that schedule, and it includes Alabama to go along with the usual matchups versus Florida, Georgia, and Tennessee, and then a tough non-conference slate with Middle Tennessee State, who should be very fun to watch offensively, Kansas State, who is solid and could end up being a dark horse in the Big 12, and then Western Kentucky, who they played last year, and just like Middle Tennessee State, should be very good once again offensively, especially through the air. So tough schedule, talked about the expectations for the team heading into 2017, and of course trolled Tennessee a little bit as well. So that's enough of me yapping at y'all. We might as well get right into it. Here is Christian D'Andrea of anchorofgold.com. I am very excited to be joined on the show by the editor-in-chief of anchorofgold.com, Christian D'Andrea. Christian, what's happening, man? How you doing?
I'm doing all right, Colton. How about yourself?
I'm doing good, man. This NBA Finals game's about to start, so gonna check that out when we're done recording. So when the listeners hear this tomorrow, you'll know either Game 6 for the Cavs and the Warriors or the Warriors are champions. But none of that shit matters, because we're here to talk Vanderbilt football, and I couldn't be more excited to talk about Vandy.
That you might be the first person who's ever said that. I cover Vandy every year, and I am never that excited to cover Vandy football.
That may be like a sign that I have a huge problem.
Yeah, you got to talk to someone about that, yeah.
All right, well, let's get into it. So last year, Vanderbilt goes 6-7. They make a bowl game for the first time since 2013. And the first time under Derek Mason. From your vantage point, how would you assess where Vanderbilt football is right now and where it's headed as compared to maybe some of the other teams in the SEC East?
Well, you really have to be impressed with the slow, steady progress Derek Mason has made. He was handed a rough deal. James Franklin left, but Franklin left right before he was about to experience a significant downturn. Two of the most productive players in team history, Jordan Matthews and Zach Stacy, were gone. There's no one really there to play quarterback. And the Commodores cratered in his first season in 2014, 3-9. And it was a bad 3-9. Like, they were unwatchable. So he got the benefit of the doubt that first year. Second year was only slightly better at 4-8. This year he finally has the breakthrough, goes 6-7. But more importantly, three of those wins came against Georgia, Ole Miss, and Tennessee. And any year you beat Tennessee at Vanderbilt is a good, good year. Not only did they beat Tennessee, they beat them by 11 points. They put up 45 points on the Volunteers, became champions of life, lineal champions of life in the meantime. So it's been a journey with Mason, but you can see what he's doing. You can see what he's building, particularly solid defense. You know, we knew he was going to come in. He had the defensive mind. He was built those great defenses at Stanford that shut down Oregon. It took him a little while to get things going, but we really saw that unit kind of stand out and make big plays, really a bend-don't-break defense last year. What we're hoping to see next season is that offense will catch up to it. Very exciting young quarterback in Kyle Shurmur. He's the son of former Eagles offensive coordinator, Pat Shurmur, a guy who's been around the NFL for a while. Kyle is a big-armed quarterback who can make throws downfield. He got thrown into the fire as a freshman. Last year, he was better. He's still not super accurate. He still makes mistakes. But for a guy going into his junior year, there are going to be some big expectations placed on him. And it seems like he's going to have the tools he needs to thrive. He's going to have a great tailback in Ralph Webb taking the pressure off him. He's also got a handful of very solid young receivers who really haven't broken out yet, but they definitely have the chance to. Kalijah Lipscomb played a lot last year as a true freshman. Caleb Scott, sure-handed guy. They're going to have a lot more offensive opportunities next year. So it looks like last year's six-win baseline is something that we're going to be looking at as the foundation for 2017.
You brought up some of what Derek Mason had to deal with when he first took over for James Franklin and some of those core guys like Matthews and Zach Stacy being out of the program and him basically not having to build it from scratch, but having to build it back up again. Do you think that most people, most fans in the program are pretty satisfied with what he's done, or is there still a little bit of uneasiness, or do you think that after going to a bowl game and how they finished the regular season last year, that he's on pretty steady ground with the fan base and what people think of him there?
He's definitely trending back upwards. I think there was a little bit of uncertainty. You saw the Fire Mason guys start to come out around year two. But at the same time, you know, a lot of teams, especially you guys up in Ohio, you look at 6-7 and you scoff at that. But you got to realize Vandy, when I went there, we were in the midst of a 25-year bowl drought. They got to the Music City Bowl and somehow won that over Boston College in 2008 in a game where the punter was named bowl game MVP. Expectations are super low in Nashville. And what happened with Franklin is that he got those expectations back up. He had a couple nine-win seasons, and that was enormous. That was great. It built the program, helped a new level of recruits get in there. It also kind of sort of started to spoil fans. We saw how good this team can be, what someone can do with those academic restrictions, how you can build upon the team's lack of football tradition and use it as a recruiting chip. So there is a little bit of uncertainty and hostility around Mason, but I would say the majority of fans are very happy with the way last year turned out. And while, of course, we always want more, we're not at the point where we're saying, let's get this guy out of here. He's not the right guy for the job. it's very clear that Mason is a guy who can fulfill expectations in Nashville, and he's not plateaued yet. He's only going to be getting better. And we're really looking forward to seeing what the next step in his steady improvement is.
I'm interested to get your take on this because we've talked a little bit about Franklin, and he took the Penn State job, and we saw what he did last year with Penn State winning the Big Ten and going to the Rose Bowl. And say Vanderbilt takes another step forward this season and then steps forward again in 2018, and if he took another job eventually, do you think that Vanderbilt fans are okay with the program kind of becoming a place where up-and-coming younger head coaches that are on the rise can come and take that job and stay three or four seasons, have a little bit of success, and then go? I know personally, and I don't want to compare these two programs because Vanderbilt's definitely a better job, but just up the road from me in Boulder, Colorado State kind of has a reputation now, especially where Jim McElwain came in and built that program up, and I want to say went 10-3 in his last year and then took the Florida job. Then they make a second hire in Mike Bobo. Mike Bobo isn't going to be there forever. They're going to be very good again this year, and eventually he'll take another job. And like I said, not comparing those two jobs, but do you think that Vanderbilt fans would be okay with that type of scenario going forward with the program? If, hey, you know, if the price of having a good coach is that he leaves every three or four years, we're okay with that as long as we get good football?
I mean, I think we would accept it. There was still some residual bitterness over how Franklin left, and that was a situation where a guy went back to his home state and wound up taking his dream job. And granted, he didn't leave in the best way. He was a little bit disingenuous with how he left and how he dressed his players, how he broke the news to the guys there, and what he did with recruits and whether or not he poached some guys that were Vandy guys. It was a little bit more messy than I'm sure a lot of fans would like. I think the bigger issue for us is figuring out a way to make Vanderbilt that destination, maybe not even a destination, but the kind of job where you can retain a coach. With the academic standards the way they are, that's always going to be tough, but you got to figure that this is a program in a school that, if it liked what Franklin was doing and it liked having that little bit of notoriety and that positive press, they should be willing to open the coffers and really not only spend to keep coaches in with their salaries, but also to upgrade the facilities to really make their jobs easier on the recruiting trail and to bring the players they need in. So I think we're willing to accept that a good coach is going to be looking at other positions, certainly. I think what Vanderbilt fans want more than anything else is an administration that's willing to commit and make the financial backing necessary to ensure that this job isn't just a stepping stone, that when we bring in a young, highly touted assistant, that we're going to give him all the tools he needs to succeed.
Well, and Derek Mason, as you bring up on the academic restrictions, certainly familiar with that coming from Stanford. And you brought up the life champion, so we might as well talk about him. Vandy, of course, beat Tennessee last year. That's the third time in the last five seasons that they've beaten UT. They also beat Florida in 2013, and they played them pretty close the last two seasons, and then beat Georgia last year, and they beat him in 2013 as well. Is it like a given now that Vanderbilt's going to come up and nip one of these big-name teams in the ass every single season? Because even if they're not beating them, they're playing these teams tough every single year. And that has to be a sign of, hey, this program has at least reached the point where those schools can't overlook them anymore.
It is, and I think this is something that's been building for quite a long time. We really saw this kind of rear its head in the Bobby Johnson era. Bobby Johnson would occasionally, about once a year, pull out one of those big SEC upsets, whether it was against Georgia or against South Carolina, get a big win over a ranked team, then inevitably lose to Kentucky or Mississippi State or Duke or whoever. It was a frustrating team, but they did enough. They played with enough passion, and they made the right moves to get in there and be that kind of spoiler team. I think that's something, yeah, we are going to see that from here on out. Obviously, there's going to have to be a little bit better roster management so we don't have the bottoming out that we had in 2014 or that carried over really into 2015. So it might not be every year, but we're certainly at a point right now where teams aren't going to be as willing to schedule Vanderbilt as their homecoming game as they were in the past.
So Vanderbilt, getting into this season, finished 90th offensively in S&P Plus last year, but they bring back 94% of their production, which is good for third nationally, and have one of the country's best backs in Ralph Webb. And we'll get into him in a second, but overall, what do you think the outlook is for the offense heading into this season, and what was kind of the story on them after spring ball?
Well, the spring ball this year was extremely encouraging. We saw our receivers step up in a big way, and that's something that's great to see. We really haven't had anyone reliable since Jonathan Krause and Jordan Matthews were in town. Since then, we've had a few guys that could step up. Like I mentioned before, Lipscomb is really going to, looks like he's going to develop into a very useful player. A couple seniors this year, CJ Duncan and Caleb Scott, Trent Sherfield as well. Veteran leadership guys who are either big playmakers or have reliable hands, guys who can be kind of safety blankets for a still developing quarterback like Kyle Shermer. That's all going to be a huge, huge part of really improving this team's offense and making them not only more successful on the field, but more watchable, because Lord knows those 14 and 15 teams were just a nightmare to cover. What, of course, is the most exciting thing about this team right now is the running game. It's going to be tough losing a couple big-time blockers in Will Holden and Barrett Gouget, guys who really helped clear a lot of space for Ralph Webb. But that's a deep, deep tailback platoon right now. Webb, of course, is the number one guy. Already the team's all-time leading rusher. He's going to add on to that total this year. Knock on wood that he doesn't get hurt. If he does get hurt, though, worst-case scenario, Kari Blassingame. This guy is incredible to watch. Converted linebacker, hits like a Mack truck, just really, really just lowers his shoulder and blasts through defenders. Great short yardage guy, but he also has the speed to get out in space. Not super elusive, but he runs hard. He's difficult to bring down. And like I said, he's converted. So last year was really his first year as a full-time back. Expect him to be even better this year. So Vandy could end up having one of the best running games in the SEC, and it's all on the shoulders of Ralph Webb and Kari Blassingame.
I absolutely love watching Ralph Webb run the ball. He's always moving forward. He's not afraid to contact, and like, he is just a tough little son of a bitch. Like, he's just so fun to watch run. And with him and Blassingame, and they're both pretty punishing guys, if they're able to get any sort of help from this passing game, how big of a year do you think that rushing attack can have?
Well, that's the crazy thing. When you look at Webb's stats, he's this 1,000-yard rusher. And you think about it, and this is against teams that were constantly stacking the box with eight guys. Vandy had no passing attack to make other teams honest whatsoever. So, yeah, even just getting teams to play more in more nickel packages or dime packages or get fewer linebackers out of the box and really just create a little more second-level space for Webb to run. Because he's great. He finds holes. He's great vision. He blasts through the line of scrimmage. When he gets up to that second level, where he struggles is turning 7-yard gains into 20-yard gains. So having the kind of playmakers on the outside, guys who can keep safeties honest, making sure that no one's sneaking up to the line of scrimmage early on, giving them a little bit more space in that second level could be huge. That could be a major, major turning point. That could be something that gets Ralph Webb from like a 5.1 yard per carry average to up in the sixes. Because he can really, really make guys miss at the point of contact. But once he gets in that crowded space around the linebackers and in the secondary, that's where he gets brought down. Spread the field a little bit more with the passing game, and he's going to have a lot more success.
On the passing game, quarterback Kyle Shermer is back for his junior year. And after struggling a little bit at the start of the season, he closed out the regular season really well against Ole Miss and Tennessee before having a tough game in the bowl game. How optimistic do you think people are, and how optimistic are you that he's going to be able to take that next step forward as a junior, not to one of the three or four best quarterbacks in the SEC, but to just being able to have a consistent passing game and give that extra dimension to add to those guys?
You know, we have modest expectations here. You know, the best quarterback since Jay Cutler left might have been Aaron Rodgers' little brother, who's now more notable for winning the Bachelorette than anything else in his life, which... No, it doesn't feel great to say out loud. But after him, Austin Carter Samuels, two quality quarterbacks, were not all conference players, but were very good, protected the ball well, found their windows of opportunity downfield, made the right throws, didn't make too many mistakes. That's really all we're looking for in Shermer right now. We understand he's got the potential to be much more. He could be a guy who winds up as an NFL draft pick. He has the mechanics, he has the bona fides, he has the bloodlines. He's really just got to put everything together. But the flashes are there. The issue for him has just been really adjusting the speed of the SEC game and really finding his open targets downfield, making sure he sees guys. And to be fair, the Vandy receiving core has not been doing him a ton of favors. Like I said before, we have a bunch of guys who are building something, but there's no real foundation there yet. We have a lot of talented guys, but no one guy who can really be an all-SEC standout. No big tight end, although Jared Pinkney could be it this year. No big tight end that can really be a safety blanket. He needs that reliable guy like Jordan Rodgers and Austin Kiser-Samuels had in Jordan Matthews, where if they get in trouble, they know they have a target downfield, a guy who can rise up and make those catches as long as he puts them in the spot where no one else can get to it. That is going to be the biggest piece of his development in 2017. If he can establish that kind of rapport, that would not only improve his game, but also really lift the level of his receivers with him. That would just be enormous. And I think their expectations that he's going to be better. He's got a shot at being an all-SEC guy, but he's going to have to make some pretty big strides to get there.
Talked about earlier, Derek Mason coming over from Stanford, and Stanford, of course, has had success with that power attack. And even after this season with Ralph Webb leaving, do you think that Mason and that offense, have they kind of set that offensive identity to be a power team? Because even in the SEC, which was known for this throughout the 90s and 2000s of when other teams like in the Big 12 or even in the Big 10 were moving more towards spread, it was always, we play power in the SEC. But now you see a team like Alabama who's using a lot of those spread principles, to where a team like Vandy, it's kind of not in the norm anymore to just run that type of power system. Do you think that that's going to be their identity going forward, no matter who the players are?
I believe it'll be a hybrid. Obviously, so much of it depends on the personnel you have. And right now they are in great shape to have that power game set up. But when you look at the personnel, not only on the field, but in the coach's box, you do see the potential for that power game to not only make an appearance in 2016, 2017, but well into the future. Right now, the team's offensive coordinator, replacing Carl Durrell, which, thank God, oh, that man was a nightmare, is Andy Ludwig. Ludwig, he cut his teeth. One of his most notable stops was Utah. He's on that Utah team that went on to a BCS bowl game win. His last stop before Vanderbilt was Wisconsin. He's very big. He can do a lot with power rushing teams, and obviously that's his forte. So, yeah, I can definitely see that continuing well in the future. Right now, it's a pretty solid lineup of runners on the team. Webb's going to be leaving this year, but next year you're going to have Blassen game back. Jamari Wakefield is a redshirt freshman. Looked great in spring practice. He could be the next guy to come up and really make a difference. Another guy who may make an impact, Josh Crawford. He's had his moments in the past season or so, but he might not wind up ever being an early starting caliber guy. Oh, and Keyshawn Vaughn, who's going to be sitting out this year, Nashville native, went to PearlCon, went to Illinois, started there as a true freshman, two seasons with the Illini, made the best move of his career, got the hell out of Dodge, came back down to Nashville. So once Webb's gone, he's going to be turning the reins over to Vaughn, a guy with all Big Ten potential who made a big impact as a true freshman. You're going to have him, Blassen game, Wakefield. You have the ingredients there for a very strong power running game, and I do think that Mason and Ludwig will keep that going at least for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I think if I were a recruit, I would much rather be playing for Derek Mason than Illinois' Lovie Smith, that is for sure. But looking at the defense, the big story heading into this season is the loss of linebacker Zach Cunningham, who had been so awesome for that unit the past couple of seasons. He leaves early and goes to the NFL, taken in the second round by the Texans. And as of now, what's kind of their situation at linebacker? I've heard just in reading and kind of trying to follow from afar what they're going to do, that Oren Burks, who had been playing at outside linebacker, has shifted into inside linebacker. And a lot of people are really excited about his ability. Do you think he's going to be able to step up and fill that role? And what's the outlook for them at linebacker this year? Because it's such a big loss.
Yeah, Burks had been playing that star position that Mason prefers, which is kind of a hybrid where he can kind of float around the second level, even as a big safety or as an outside linebacker or inside linebacker. Well, if you're looking at the heart and soul of this defense, that's going to be your guy right there for sure. The good news is, I mean, you're never going to really replace a guy like Zach Cunningham. His ability to be everywhere on the field and his nose for the ball, I think the dude recovered like four fumbles. He just had this preternatural feel for the game, and I think he's going to do great things with the Texans, obviously. But replacing him is going to be very difficult. The good news is the cupboard is well stocked. One thing Mason has done very well is find the defensive players he needs to build his kind of his Southern Stanford, if you will. He gets guys that maybe aren't huge recruits, but he gets the guys he knows that are going to fit in the system and be able to step in and play from day one. Guys we're really excited about right now include Jordan Griffin, inside linebacker, who's going to be able to take a lot of snaps in Cunningham's absence. Josh Smith was a four-star guy. He's going to be junior this year. He can make a ton of plays, and he's actually built a lot like Cunningham. He's a 6'4", a little bit lean, but very quick to get from sideline to sideline and makes plays. Guys like that are going to have a lot of opportunities to step up, make plays, get work done in the second level, and you're going to see a lot of players kind of emerge from the ether, step out of Zach Cunningham's shadows, and I believe that they're going to still be an effective unit. The big problem is, how do you replace Cunningham's big playability? He was the guy that made the stop against Georgia on 4th-and-1 to secure the win. He's the guy that leapt over the line of scrimmage against Auburn to keep Vandy in the game and block a field goal. They can replace maybe 90% of his contributions on the field, but no one else has that feel for the moment, the ability to make those big plays. Someone young is going to have to step up and replace that, because without Cunningham's massive contributions, this team maybe sneaks into a bowl game because there's APR score last year, but I don't know if they get by Georgia without Zach Cunningham being everywhere and making about 300 tackles.
One place that it seems like they've really stocked the cupboard well is in the secondary, and they lose cornerback Torin McGaster, but basically everyone else is back, and they're all seniors. Do you think that strong secondary play is going to be the calling card for this defense this year?
Absolutely, yeah. One of the things Vandy's actually been great at producing in the last decade or so has been cornerbacks. Guys like Casey Hayward, Myron Lewis, DJ Moore, guys who went to the pros were drafted. So there's not only is the tradition there, it's also something they can sell to incoming recruits, and that's how we got guys like Jawan Williams, big-time four-star player, played a little bit as a true freshman behind McGaster. Now he's going to have the chance to start right away. And he's the big kind of cornerback Mason loves. 6'3", tall, got a little bit of a Richard Sherman inside him. He can go and make plays down the field and make sure he's the kind of player. He's got the athleticism. You can leave him on an island and not have to worry about him that much. Obviously, there are going to be some growing pains. Dude's only a sophomore, but he's going to be a big, big player next year. On top of that, you got your starters, Trey Herndon, Donovan Sheffield, Torian Ferguson. Great, great group of cornerbacks there. Other teams are going to have a lot of trouble throwing against Vandy in 2017.
So I didn't look at their schedule until today, and I was looking at the non-con, and I think if you're just like a general college football fan and you don't know much about some of these teams, you would think and say, okay, that's an easy non-con. But, man, at Middle Tennessee to start the season, Alabama A&M, which should be a pushover.
That's a gimme.
And then Kansas State and Western Kentucky. Those three right there, like Middle Tennessee State, I don't think a lot of people know, with Stock still the quarterback, and Richie James, a kid who caught 105 passes for over 1,600 yards and 12 touchdowns last season. Those dudes love to throw. K-State is, you know, they're always K-State. You don't know what you're going to get out of them, but they could be a very strong team. And then Western Kentucky, which arguably was the best non-Power 5 team last season, and they bring back their quarterback. How are you feeling about this non-conference slate? And do you think 3-1 people would be pretty ecstatic with that?
I think so, but I think 4-0 is on the table too. I think that at Middle Tennessee State game is a little bit troubling, but Vandy typically has been able to perform well against the Blue Raiders. Getting Western Kentucky at home later in the season is going to be helpful. Team's going to be used to teams slinging the ball a little bit more on them. And plus, they've seen Western Kentucky the past few years. They won a tight game last year up in Bowling
Green. That was a great game.
Yeah, great game. So there's a little bit more confidence there, especially 2 years ago, having lost their home opener to the Hilltoppers by way of a botched two-point conversion. I do think obviously you want to go 4-0 in your non-conference schedule every year. I think one of the issues with some Vandy fans, though, is that we're really looking for more cupcakes. The strength schedule to get where Vandy's going is not really something that you need to worry about as much. With the fan base is really looking at those 6 wins as the baseline. You want the easiest path to get there. You don't necessarily need the big wins over frenzied competition to get there. So yeah, there's definitely a downside to booking MTSU in Western Kentucky, especially when they've been so dangerous lately. I think a lot of teams would rather see us go ahead and bring in Old Dominion again or maybe double up with Alabama A&M and Richmond, go against some of the transition teams. Hell, bring UMass back. Get someone in there who is a bona fide FBS team who is willing to come swallow a paycheck and get beat down in Nashville. That's the way a lot of fans think. Personally, I'm happy that we're going to get some competitive games when the SEC isn't in town.
Yeah, and on the subject of strength of schedule, you got that midseason stretch with Kansas State, Alabama, at Florida, and then Georgia in consecutive weeks. So it should be fun to watch them against some very good teams. So all that being said, with what we talked about, the offense and Ralph Webb and Blassing game kind of anchoring that running game along with Kyle Shermer's development, and then the defense and the strong secondary in replacing Zach Cunningham, what do you think is a fair expectation for Vanderbilt in 2017?
Well, I think you're going to be looking at a strong defense. Like I said before, losing Cunningham hurts, and it's going to be tough to replace him and having that big game presence. But you have so much talent returning on both sides of the ball. The one big question mark is, A, will Kyle Shermer continue to develop? Can he be a starting caliber SEC quarterback beyond just being in name only? And then on top of that, will this offensive line, having lost its starting left tackle, will it be able to gel together and really be enough to hold off some of the ferocious SEC defenses you're going to have? And like you mentioned, 4 weeks into the season, they get to test that theory against Alabama, which could be great or just a complete, complete bloodletting. But those are the big questions there. I think if you look at the schedule, I think you can make the case that this team's got 6-7 wins in them, no problem. I mean, A&M, even if you just take a look at the home games, that's after that brutal stretch where it's Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Ole Miss. It goes at South Carolina, obviously a tough game, but winnable. Then Western Kentucky, regular Kentucky, Missouri, all at home. You got to like the chances for them to finish strong. If they get through the first 8 games of the season at 4-4, I think fans are going to be really happy with that. I think we're going to be looking at 6-7 wins, maybe 8, and 8 wins going into a bowl game. That's something James Franklin would have done. If Derek Mason can do that, he's going to be a local hero. They're going to love him even more than they already do.
Is Vanderbilt going to get Butch Jones fired this year?
God, I hope so. You know what? Part of me doesn't want it to, because they're going to bring in, like, every time Tennessee fires a coach, and it's like you always worry that they're going to get someone better, someone who actually can take advantage of everything that job has to bring. And then what happens every year is that they get a guy who recruits the hell out of the area, brings in a bunch of 5-star guys, and then they inevitably lose to Vandy, and everyone talks about how they're going to get fired. So part of me is worried that they're finally going to find the guy who can put everything together. And then part of me is like, yeah, but Butch is kind of an asshat, so he can go.
Well, if you want to follow any of Vanderbilt's journey to hopefully a second straight bowl game and hopefully trolling of Tennessee and their fans as well, you can do so by going to anchorofgold.com and following them on Twitter at anchorofgold. And you can catch all of Christian DeAndrea's work there. And you can also find him on Twitter at Train Island. Christian, thanks for joining the show and talking Vanderbilt. I appreciate it.
It was a pleasure, Colton. Anytime.
Big thank you to Christian DeAndrea of anchorofgold.com for joining the show. Make sure to check out all of their work, anchorofgold.com, at anchorofgold on Twitter, and then Christian is on Twitter at Train Island. Hard not to root for Vanderbilt. I feel like unless you're a Tennessee fan or a Kentucky fan, then you really have no excuse to not want to see Vanderbilt do well. That's a school that always, when they go to a bowl game, or like in the Franklin years when he was going 9-4, they're easy to root for, and especially under a guy like Derek Mason, who I think has a lot of respect from his coaching peers and fans for what he did at Stanford. That's a program that I know I always like to see do well, and then you add in a running back like Ralph Webb, and I really hope that Vanderbilt's able to navigate that schedule and make it back to a bowl game. I think that they'll be able to sneak 6 wins out of that and have a nice building block towards the 2018 season. That's going to wrap up this show, though. Want to thank everybody who listened. Want to thank Christian DeAndrea for joining the show once again. And if you're a first-time listener, I want to thank you the most. I appreciate you taking the time out to listen to the show. And if you like it, please go to Apple Podcasts, search the Two Stripes Podcast, and subscribe. You can find all of the old shows there. And if you like it, leave a review. Leave a comment to me about what you like, what I can do better, any feedback that I can use to make this show the best it can possibly be. And then you can also go to soundcloud.com/twostripespod and find all of the old and new episodes there. There will be a new episode dropping on Thursday, talking Oregon football. So be on the lookout for that, and hope that you guys subscribe and listen to that one, because I think it'll be pretty good. That's going to wrap up this show, though. Hope you all enjoyed the episode. I'll be back later this week. My name is Colton Denning, and this is the Two Stripes Podcast.